Meeple Night Episode 18, a podcast revisits its top 10 of all time. Welcome to Meeple Night, a podcast about board games past, present, and future. In today's episode, we discuss our recent plays and recap our top 10 games of all time. I'm Andrew Caprell, and here's my co-host, Josh Knight.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for tuning in for another fantastic episode and to a great top 10.
Woo woo. I did some stat counting on my top 10 this time, so I have some interesting statistics about mine. They're not actually interesting, but you know. They are statistics.
I don't think most stats are interesting.
Yeah. They're like interesting when you're looking them up, but then I often find when I share them, no one else cares. So,
and I appreciate statisticians handling that kind of stuff for like our research and things like that.
Yeah. Or like, I don't know, when you watch sporting events, I always find that's like, man, how is that somebody's job to look up these, like, because they get more and more obscure every time. They're like, the first touchdown within 3 minutes and 7 seconds when the other opponent had 14 points in their last game. They're like, what?
On a Thursday night. Yeah, you just can't kind of keep going. All right, what else can we say? This is new. All right. Well, I know I saw you last night, but part of that, what have you been up to lately?
Yeah, well, I mean, so we had a long gap because we pre-recorded a little bit. So we went to Michigan for the holidays. So that was fun. But also, you know, it's hard to be kind of out of your element for a long time, which, I mean, it was only 8 days. But having the kids being out of their element, too, is like routine's a big thing. And you get really dependent on caffeine. And so, you know, come back and got to break my caffeine cycle all over again. But so I'm almost down.
Okay.
And in more exciting news, I got my Apple Watch today.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited about that. Was fiddling with that all night.
It's a nice, I wouldn't say commodity. It's like luxury. Let's say luxury.
Yeah.
It's
one
of those you appreciate that you have it, and when you don't have it on, you miss it. But at the same time, it's not like one of those, I'm going to go tell everybody, hey, you need an Apple Watch.
Right. Yeah, I mean that's fair. Basically, there was a few people at F3, that workout group that I go to in the mornings, who have an Apple Watch or a Fitbit watch or something and use it to log that. And so it's like being part of that community, you know, just like I want to log my workouts like everybody else does. And I want to track my heart rate and have something beep at me and tell me to stand up.
Or when you're having arrhythmias, it's great.
Yeah. I can take an electrocardiogram wherever I want to in the middle of the Amazon rainforest where I'll never be.
And it can measure your blood oxygen levels.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's a fun hobby. Yeah. And a fun hobby of mine we finally got to experience is I'm a big fan of pizza. You might not have actually known that about me.
I don't know that.
I'm not going to say a pizza snob, but I do have a particular style of pizza, and that just so happens to be the type of pizza that we got in New Haven, Connecticut. So that has been labeled the pizza capital of the world by somebody from this company called Barstool Sports. Guy's a little bit of a jerk, but he knows his pizza because he eats it once a day, every day.
And knows how to podcast. Yeah.
So I decided to venture up there. It also just so happens to be where my sister-in-law is at. So we saw her at Yale, but we also just mainly went for pizza. Tried a whole bunch of different joints.
Hope she doesn't listen.
We're okay on that front. But it's coal fire pizza, thin crust. It has like this little charcoal kind of nature, or not charcoal, but like that coal fire has a little bit of like residue you'll get on your fingers. I don't know how to describe it, but holy cow, was that pizza good. I ended up that day, I had 11 slices of pizza.
Holy moly.
You would think after having like a single slice or two, you kind of feel bloated, disgusting. You hate yourself. You like feel like you're popping out and pimples all over your face. Like somebody could roll their fingers over your face and it could be like Braille.
But not once you're 11
but
in.
No, not at all, because the pizza is light. It's hardly any grease. It is so carefully made. It's outstanding. I love that.
So is the type of pizza you like just kind of like the brick oven? Yeah.
But it needs to have a good crust, because if it's floppy, it's hard to eat, it's hard to manage, and it has to have the perfect ratio of crust, the sauce, the cheese, because all we got was cheese up there. We didn't go any toppings.
That was a custom made, like that was your decision?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. They're known for their white clam pizza. I'm not a big fan of that myself, because I'm not from the Northeast, but I just got cheese. You can't go wrong with cheese, and it really exemplifies some good flavors. So that's something that we did while we were up there.
Cool.
But it also feeds into my banter. So,
which is about,
you remember? I told you last night. So banter tonight is games that I played with the parents. My parents and my now in-laws. And we're going to start with the first game I played with my parents, which was Super Mega Lucky Box, designed by Phil Walker Harding and published by Game Right. This was billed as Silver and Gold meets Bingo. You have three cards with a 3x3 grid. You flip numerical cards and mark off that number on one of your cards. If you complete a row or a column, you get a bonus, be that another number to mark off, a lightning bolt to adjust a number, or a moon. And I played this with my parents on Christmas Eve. We ended up playing it twice, and both my parents got the hang of it pretty quickly. Usually after just a couple of rounds, they were already rip-roaring ready to go. My dad actually scored second place the second time we played through it, although admittedly that was out of three. I like the game, although I'm not sure if I'd play it at two players, because those moons I mentioned earlier, so whoever has the most is going to score a positive 6 points, and whoever has the least is going to get minus 6 points. And in a two-player game, that's too big of a discrepancy, I think. So we like Silver and Gold, and apparently there's a new one coming out soon enough. This one, it'll stay in our collection, but it's not going to be one that's going to hit the table for just the two of us playing here at home, because we have plenty of other filler games / roll and writes that'll fill that niche.
Cool. Yeah, this one is, when you texted me that you played it, it was one that I didn't even know what it was. I mistakenly thought it was Jackbox or something. Is that a Jack Party Box? I don't know, something like that. It's some computer game thing.
Yeah.
Which obviously it is not.
And it has the font of the Schoolhouse Rock.
Yeah, yeah. I looked at it today. Sounds like it'd be worth a try. Kind of that Silver and Gold. When you sell it with that, anyway, it sounds like it's worth a try.
And it's even easier than that. I've taught Silver and Gold to my parents. They got the hang of it, I think. They did okay. We were kind of helping them, but they could hold their own with this after just a couple of rounds of kind of getting into the groove of things. So Super Mega Lucky Box. Weird name. Pretty cool game, but maybe not for two players.
Alrighty. Well, one that I also played with my parents. It was at a baptism party, so I think it was the December 26th or 7th. Easily could have been mistaken as Christmas game, but was not. Anyways, that's irrelevant completely. It is one that we've mentioned, but I don't think discussed in too much detail on the show, which is Just One, designed by Ludovic Rudy and Bruno Sauter. Sorry, I did not look up those pronunciations, because I had the designers from Destiny's listed, and I knew it was not Mikhail Golubovsky. So it's like, no, I had to learn that name. There's no way it's that. So sorry for mispronunciations, Ludovic and Bruno. Published by Repos. So this is a word party game, where everybody, before everybody, the person whose turn it is gets a card with five different words on it. They don't get to look at the words. We roll a die, but however you want, pick a number 1 through 5. Then everyone has to write down a one word clue on a little board that they're given. And you just turn, the other person turns around or closes their eyes so they can't see. And then everybody compares clues. Any clues that are repeated get eliminated. And then Any clues that remain are given to the person who has to guess what the word is, and you just try and, I don't know, we do that. I think it's 13 times is the official rules. Anytime we've played, it's just unlimited, and we just go until we don't feel like playing anymore. But more of an activity.
Yeah.
Just for fun. So we had a good time. We've always had a good time playing it. It's one that is very easy to get my dad to play. So he was actually the one who suggested it. So that's nice. How I know it's a hit for him. We bought it 2 years ago, and we left it at their house because he liked it so much.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's a good one. It won the Spiel back in 2019, and it's a solid game. We just recently picked it up, actually, to play at the wedding, which didn't happen because we got caught up with other things, but we've played it probably 15 times since Thanksgiving.
You played it with Veronica's family and your family now, right?
Yep, and we played it. We had a little New Year's Eve bash, which I'll talk about on the next episode. We played it then, too. It's super easy.
Yeah. Awesome.
Good choice. Well, moving along into more games played with parents, and now the in-laws, and a game that I'm going to butcher the designers' names. This is Potion Explosion, which we've mentioned on the podcast before, but haven't gone into a little detail. So this one's designed by Stefano Castilli and Andrea Crespi, Lorenzo Silva, and is published by Horrible Guild. So this is a fun marble game where you try to create these explosions by removing a marble, and if the marble above and below match colors, they explode. You can use multiple explosions, and you get all the marbles that explode to fill your flask. It's a little hard to explain, but I'll elaborate on more of the enjoyment of the game instead. So Veronica and I have played this quite a lot, actually, and we've played it with Jeff before, and then this time, we actually ended up playing with her mom. Well, sort of. We played in teams. Sort of. Veronica and her mom versus me. Anyways, by the time we started getting a couple rounds in, we had literally her entire family engaged in this game. All of them were like suggesting which marble to grab. It was a lot of fun. There's a lot of variation and expansions to keep this game fresh. And like, for instance, one expansion adds a wild white marble, which is pretty cool. Others kind of put different flask that you could utilize. It's an easy game to pick up and play after a hard weekday, and it gets a recommendation from me. We've enjoyed it, two players and on up. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, this is one that sounds fun, and kind of it seems like it has that like app addictive nature to it. Where because it's so simple,
like Candy Crush, that type of mentality. Yep. And it's got a toy factor, too, with all the marbles. Mm-hmm. We have the second printing of it, which came with a plastic dispenser for the marbles and stuff. It's cool. It's really neat. Horrible Guild did a fantastic job with this game.
Nice. Yeah. Some, as per usual, you know, this is one that I need or would like to play, need to put on my two playlists whenever. Yeah. We're going to have another Meeple Knight Con before we...
Oh, absolutely. I think we might have to have two, because Twilight Imperium has to occur.
That's in its... Yeah, that whole day it just becomes a con. All right. Speaking of heavy games that take a long time to play, just kidding, not really. My last game to talk about today is Pulsar 2849, which we played together. Is designed by Vladimir Suchy and published by Czech Games Edition.
Surprise.
The best publisher of all time, or at least this Andrew's last year. Anyway, so this is a dice drafting game where there's kind of two phases, a dice phase and then what you do, I think, or there's three phases. Anyway, so the dice phase, you pick your dice and then you're going to use those dice in the next phase to either fly ships, patent a technology, build transmitters, start spinning gyrodynes, or work on a headquarters project. The reason you're doing any of this is because you're trying to fly around the universe, or galaxy, I guess, to find pulsars, which humanity now uses to produce energy. And so you're trying to produce energy. When you get one of the gyrodynes spinning in a pulsar, you get points at the end of each round. In the final phase that I forgot about earlier, which is the production phase. So you're flying your ships around to find the pulsars and find planets You're patenting technology to either get better at certain types of actions or get points for certain types of actions. Building transmitters is kind of, I don't really know what that's supposed to do thematically. I know what it does mechanically.
Yeah.
It just gets you points or sometimes recurring bonuses.
Yeah.
I'm not sure thematically why it's doing that. And then working on HQ projects is also just kind of one-time bonuses. It's usually a good way to use like low-value dice if you line it up correctly. But yeah, this is one that I had played before, but it's been a year, probably 2 years. And I think I'd forgotten how good it was, because I really enjoyed our play last night. And yeah. I thought that two players wasn't as good, but I think I misremembered that because I think you get a lot more done in two player, and it didn't feel like we were missing any interaction or anything. Sometimes, yeah. You know, when you play a game that's best at three or four, the two player, the problem is that everybody can just do their own thing, which, I mean, was definitely the case, but it's not like, it didn't feel like it was missing as part of the game.
Yeah.
Like, agreed. It's kind of an open Euro anyways.
Yeah, this was a solid game, and on the drive home last night, I was comparing it to Merv. I think it had, you know, a game we've already reviewed on the podcast. I think it had a lot of really good elements. I think that transmitter could have been excluded, and the game would have been the same. And along the same lines, I think Merv had that same thing. It had like one or two tracks that could have been just left off, and it wouldn't have changed my impression of it. I think, though, for me, the biggest issue with this game is there's no solo mode.
Right.
I love the game. It was quick, despite it being a little bit of a crunchier Euro. And it's just that no solo mode hurts it.
Yeah, I'm wondering now that you've said that about Merv, because when we played four player, it does not feel like the transmitters were useless. I know I mentioned that a little bit. Last night when we were talking after we played. But yeah, I think that maybe if Merv was played a four player, the same thing might apply. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I have to try it someday. But because when you have four players in this game, you're a lot more restricted to what you can do because you only get one action per round. So you kind of got to do what you can with your one die.
Yeah. And in that case, you need some of those extra tracks or other little things to focus on.
And the transmitters give you a free bonus. I mean, every other transmitter you have gets you a free bonus die, which is pretty big.
Yeah, it's a solid game. I think Vladimir Suki does a good job with producing really fun, crunchy Euros. And I liked it.
Awesome.
Well, let's move into our top 10 to see if Vladimir Suki or any of these other great publishers and designers have made it into our modified or our updated top 10 list.
Let's do it, do it, do it. And finally, we'll discuss our top 10 games of all time.
So this discussion tonight, we wanted to revisit our top 10 list. Now, we realize we just had our top 10 on the podcast back in May of last year. However, every other content creator is having a top 10 of 2021 that they've played, and now they've got their new top 10 list of all time. We thought we would continue that trend. And I think there might be some changes, or you'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. And also, just out of sheer laziness, you know, just because.
One of us is lazy.
All right. Fine.
So starting with.
Whoa. Before we do the number
honorable 10, mentions?
No, not honorable mentions. I just wanted to discuss the statistics on my
already?
Top 10.
Oh man.
Fine, we can discuss them at the end. That's fine.
No, go for it. Let's hear the stats.
I just wanted to validate all of my list before we talk.
Okay, and then I'll wake people up as soon as you're done.
I just took a look at the, you know, BGG top 10, top 100, etc.
And you just copied it? Wow, real original.
Yeah. It's like, you know what? I will be correct. My top 10 will be correct if I put the I got all the right answers.
Oof.
No. Actually, I guess, what did you use the same format we did last time when we
Pub Meeple.
Came up with our top 10 list, Pub Meeple.
Yeah, and then from Pub Meeple, I went back and said, all right, does that make sense? I think last time I had some Rollin' Rights pretty high up, and I was like, I'm going to put some crunchier stuff in here instead.
Yeah. I mean, I did a similar format. So I took everything from my top 25 from last time. Everything from the top 10 of 2021, and then also just kind of went through and made sure there wasn't anything I didn't do. So I had 40 games, I think, in my list.
Okay.
And then, I did what would I rather play for all of it. And then at the end of it, my sanity check was like, well, what about the memories that those games had, right? Because like that's what's really hard for me is balancing the memories of those games and what would I play right now.
True.
So this is a top 10 of all time for me, not top 10 of this year or something like that, right? So I have to incorporate the memories of those games.
True.
But anyways, the result of that, I have one crossover, only one, with the BGG top 10. Six are in the BGG top 100. Hold on, don't wake up yet. Eight in the top 125. And there are two big fallouts that just barely made it into the top 500. So I 80% agree with BGG.
Okay. I think I'm probably more in line with BGG with my picks. I think more of mine are in the top 125 than yours.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll find out.
I mean, eight of mine are. That's a lot.
I know. I think nine of mine are.
All right. Well, how many crossovers?
Let's see. I'm going to go three. I'm going to say three.
And I, unlike per usual, I'm going to guess less than you. I think only two.
Yeah.
But there is one that I'm not sure about that may be on your list. We'll see.
Okay. Well, let's get right into it then. So number 10. Number 10 for me is a new game from 2021. And in fact, 2021 was a good year for games. And that's Hadrian's Wall. So wow. I may have some recency bias, though. And I know how you feel about it. Don't worry. But since our last recording, I have actually played more of the solo campaign.
Okay.
And I loved it. It forced me to go different routes than I normally don't do. For instance, one game I needed a bunch of brick. So I had to do scouting to get laborers and other bricks. And there's so many different paths to explore. And I can't wait to play it more. It's my personal favorite Vermin Right. And even if it's not one that I'm going to play with Veronica or pretty much anyone else, I think I'd only play this solo. But I know, Andrew, I loved Fleet the Dice Game. But I tend to like slightly heavier games for my personal top 10, even if I would probably play those more often.
Right. Yeah, no, that's fair. And I think you're right that I think the solo campaign is, my intuition is that it's the best way to play it. I've only played four or five of them, and it still wasn't enough to fix it for me, but I think that's the best way to play.
Yeah.
I agree. Cool. I'm surprised it's that high, but that's good to hear you're enjoying that one.
But at the same time, number 10 can easily fall out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, yeah, we'll talk about the ones that dropped out at the end. Surprising for me, some of them. All right, my number 10, also in a sad state of affairs. Down four places. Castles of Burgundy.
Oh.
Designed by Stefan Feld, published by Alea. This is the pretty much, I mean, not universally, but the BGG top Stefan Feld game, I think. And a lot of people's favorite Feld. Not mine. They're, I'm so dumb. I forgot my own favorite Feld.
I know. I know your favorite one. Spoiler.
So it's a, I guess, dice drafting slash worker place. I don't really know how to put it. You're kind of building a tableau.
It's a point salad.
Yeah, point salad. I don't know. A lot of Felds are kind of like that. You can't really classify him because he tries to do a little bit of tweaks on everything.
Yeah.
you have two dice. You're using those dice to draft tiles, and then you can also use them instead to draft tiles to place them on your board. And you're doing that to build a region that you are a duke or noble of, I guess.
Yeah, duchess.
Yeah.
What is it? You're building your duchy?
Your duchy, yeah. And so there's farms, markets, a whole bunch of different things. All ways to score points or do some sort of special powers. The downside, obviously, is that this one, being a relic of the early 2010s, has a lot of fiddly things for setup and playing, or like setup throughout the game while you're playing. A lot of pieces to move around. But this one was one that was on the cusp of not making it in, but it just holds such a special place to me for getting me into the hobby that I couldn't let it drop out of the top 10 quite yet.
Yeah, it's a good game. I enjoyed our play of it. I think someone that's played it a bunch of times has a huge advantage, but that's true for most Steffenfeld games.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can see why it stays in your top 10.
Alrighty.
But moving on to number 9.
Are we snaking it, or are we?
Yeah, let's snake. Who doesn't love a good snake?
Who doesn't? Speaking of snakes, a place where you won't find them. Number 9, Roll for the Galaxy, published by Tom Lehman and Wei Wa Wang. This is in the exact same position as it was last year. So a few games jumped over it and a few games dropped below it, one of which was Castle of Burgundy. But we're talking about Roll for the Galaxy, where you are rolling dice in a cup and then you use those behind a shield to do different actions, which might be survey, which is find more planets out in the galaxy, which is this black pouch bag called the Galaxy Bag. or you might be shipping goods, you might be producing goods, you might be researching new technologies, developing new technologies, or you might be settling on new planets. And you're doing it in a race to get the most points, Race for the Galaxy, or develop 12 different tiles. My preferred way to play this is with the base game or with only the first expansion. Which I never remember which one that is. I think it's Ambition.
That sounds right.
The base game is great by itself, so I don't think you need it.
Yeah. This is a good game. Since in the interval of us doing this top 10, I've played Race and Roll for the Galaxy. I prefer Race myself. But I can, because I like the boom action. Like if you choose specific action that you get, that everyone gets to do it, and then you get an extra bonus little part of doing that, more than, because Roll for the Galaxy doesn't offer that. So I think I prefer the card game instead of the dice game.
Yeah, that's fair. I like the slight randomness, or more randomness of the Roll for the Galaxy, or it's not random, but that extra element of tactics that comes out of having to roll the dice and not knowing exactly what you're going to get. You know pretty much probably what you're going to get, but I like dealing with that.
Yeah, it's fun. I just wish I had a dedicated solo mode.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, my number 9 is fantastic at solo. And I think it's going to come no surprise that I'm going to have Marvel Champions on my list. So this is for all of the content that's currently produced. I've got it all except for, I think, one campaign box. But I haven't played with all the characters, though. And I've only played through the Red Skull campaign. But still, for 2021 alone, I ended up playing this over 25 times. It was my most played game. And I just really, really love it. Each character, I actually enjoy some of the original characters the most. Doctor Strange is good. I love Captain America. Who doesn't love Captain America? Iron Man is still my favorite as of this moment, which came in the core box, and it's fantastic. I'm excited to see how they're continuing as they produce more characters and more boxes, they make it even more advanced, and it's a fantastic system. I have to give credit to Fantasy Flight and you know, it's, I think the IP really does, the intellectual property does pull me in even more, but it's just an outstanding system by itself. The mechanisms are great. So Marvel Champions, number 9.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the IP was probably a great decision for them because it turned, it kind of combined the Lord of the Rings and I'm forgetting Arkham Horror LCGs, right? And kind of took the best out of both of those, but then gave it the Marvel IP, which I think is even more popular than either of those. Well, definitely more than Arkham Horror. I don't know if it's more popular than Lord of the Rings, but
at least to the common people, yeah.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, I think that, and it's been obviously doing really well with how many expansions are coming out. It doesn't seem like it's dying anytime soon, which definitely happens to Fantasy Flight. After a couple, after 2 years, a lot of games kind of start hitting the brakes. But this one seems like it's going strong still.
They're going to eventually run out of your traditional Marvel characters. And I think at that point, they're going to introduce the X-Men. That'll be like to revive the franchise even more. So I'm excited for it.
Or just do what the Lord of the Rings did and just come out with second edition, which is just new art, same game.
Yeah,
that's not exactly weird. True. But.
Yeah. Well, let's move into number 8. This one definitely is no surprise. I've mentioned it on so many top 10 lists, and that's Teotihuacan. You know, I said I needed to get it back to the table before this discussion. Well, I failed. I'm sorry. Maybe I'll blame the snowstorm, or maybe I'll blame the fact that I finally got Spirit Island to the table. But regardless, I'm sorry. Andrew, you made that new expansion, the one with the Obsidian, the expansion period. You made that sounds amazing. And I still just didn't pull it back down. But I still love this game. I could see this position changing, whether it's going to go up or down after I actually play some more. But man, do I love the mechanisms of this game. Yeah. And this year, so 2022, in March, Board and Dice is coming out with the Founders of Teotihuacan, which is a small abstract game based on the little pyramid mechanism in this game. So I think that will continue. I love everything with this game. So there's also expert challenges for the soul, just like the solo mode with Hadrian's Wall. I haven't done that yet because it's actually quoted as saying it's only for the most experienced players. I'm definitely not that, but I love this game of all the T series.
Yeah,
especially since I can play the solo. This one's my favorite.
And it belongs in the exact same position on my list. At number 8, Teotihuacan. Which is also new to my list.
Is it? Okay.
Yes, it is. I think I must have forgotten about it last time.
See, it dropped 2 spaces on mine.
And I think the recent play helped with the expansion for me.
Gotcha.
And I never gave it a chance at 2 because I thought it would be dumb, frankly. I didn't like the idea of the dice sitting there because the first time I ever played it was at 4. And having the dice always move is a big game changer. And I will say I do prefer that still. I do like the dice moving around throughout the whole round. But it wasn't as game-breaking as I expected it to be. And speeding up the game is a decent trade-off for that, right? So you're not getting the same experience, but you're getting it much faster. So kind of worth it. I agree with pretty much everything you said. It's one that we don't own right now. We have Brian's copy sitting in our library. So when we move, we'll have to hope that they come out with a big box or something.
I don't think that's Board and Dice's MO.
No, it's not. But why not make money? I don't get it.
Board and Dice would rather make new games.
Yeah. I mean, everything except Shadows of Xetlai is easy enough to find in stock. So.
Yeah. Well, good. So, I have to admit, good pick.
Yes! First crossover.
Yep.
That was one I expected.
And it won't be the last.
No, it will not.
All right. Well, let's see how many more we've got. Number 7.
All right. My number 7 is something I'm going to be yelled at for because I was yelled at for it last time. And it's probably way too low for you. That would be Gloomhaven, but I'm calling the Gloomhaven universe, not just Gloomhaven. So I'm including Forgotten Circles and Jaws of the Lion.
Okay.
Published by Isaac Childress. Nope. Designed by Isaac Childress. Published by Seth Blumenfair.
He publishes
yeah,
it,
too. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair, yeah. So it's down three for me. It was four last time. And it is got to be a crossover. If it's not, I'd be surprised. Since I was yelled at for putting it at number four last time.
So that would make two crossovers.
Yeah.
It is. We'll just see how high it is on my list.
Yeah, so this is Dungeon Crawler. For those who don't listen regularly or haven't played or tried Gloomhaven. Kind of an RPG experience inside of a board game. Jaws of the Lion, probably the best way to start trying it at this point. Because kind of walks you through all the rules. Doesn't overwhelm you at any point. If you are someone who has played Gloomhaven already, though, Jaws of the Lion was a little bit disappointing. I think it's much better I didn't finish it yet. It's not so disappointing that I'm not going to finish it. It hasn't been calling to us. Mm. And then Forgotten Circles also brought it down. And I know you're not a big fan of Forgotten Circles compared to the rest of the series, that is. It doesn't have me so down that I don't like Gloomhaven, but we did not finish Forgotten Circles and will not finish Forgotten Circles. That was a conscious decision. So Jaws of the Lion, better than that, but wouldn't bring it down, but Forgotten Circles kind of brought it down for me from number four last year.
That's fair. I'll reserve my comments for when I discuss it, but I took the same approach you did with discussing the whole universe and not just the singular game that is Gloomhaven, the 20-pound game.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so expansive. And I'm still excited about Frosthaven. I know you joke about it sometimes, but I'm certain you're still excited about it.
We'll see.
If not, I'll buy your copy from you. So. I'll buy your pledge from you.
Yeah. you'll be in the same town as me when that thing eventually comes out.
No. He said it's shipping in April.
Yeah, I don't believe that. We'll see. All right. Well, let's get to a game that actually does exist. Yes, I know. So this one is
even exists.
I know, but Frosthaven doesn't. That's just made up. Okay. I haven't seen it. A Dave Turchi design had to be on this list. And not just a game that he designed the solo mode for. And Imperium Classics or Imperium Legends fits that bill. Now, I personally haven't played that many Civilization-type games. And this one is kind of weird because you play with cards. So it's kind of an odd concept until you actually play it. And everything is great. Well, actually, hold on. The rules are not great. It might turn some people off, but get through it because the game is amazing. The game itself has some of these eureka moments that I've preached about so many times on the podcast, as you can get a card that allows you to draw a card, which just so happens to be a free action to provide resources that you could build a city, yada, yada, yada. That is super cool. So yes, the rules are a huge downfall. Maybe the tokens are as well, but I'm just waiting to find some better tokens. But needless to say, the gameplay and the art from the Misho make this truly a worthy game. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I should have known that this was going to be on your list. I need to start when we do these lists, come up, like, try and predict your list so that I can be like, yes, I nailed it or not.
I mean, have you been surprised thus far?
No, I haven't been, but I wasn't thinking about what order they would be in or anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I was surprised Hadrian's Wall was that high. I did know you liked it, but that's the only one I think that's not really surprised, but
yeah, I think my list is predictable, especially after you heard my best of 2021 games.
Yeah.
Which leads into number six. This is also no surprise, Lost Ruins of Arnak. And I think this one's is going to lock me up as being the three crossovers because I will say it's funny to think back. When this game was announced in 2020, I had zero interest of this game. There was just something about it I didn't care. I watched a couple different run-throughs and was uninterested. And now, for this game to be so high on my top 10 list, more than a little over a year later, And I think that solo campaign really helped. And I became invested in the game by playtesting that campaign. And I'm still waiting for the expansion to arrive. That should be here sometime this month, which gives everybody unique starting powers, which I heard everyone has described them as overpowered. Yet everyone is overpowered. So it's balanced in the long run. It's kind of a weird way of saying it, but I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah,
I've got upgraded coins and compasses that are set to arrive any day now, because that's the only thing component-wise that needed to be blinged out. I'm really excited for this game.
Yeah, yeah, I like this one a lot. We'll discuss the rest of it about it later. I don't want to spoil anything.
Three crossovers. I was right.
Number six for me is one that I held off the list last year because I hadn't played it enough. That would be Wingspan, published by, gosh dang it, designed by Elizabeth Hargraves, published by Stonemaier Games. I love Wingspan. It's got that discovery from a large deck thing that I like and have this stupid affinity for that I think a lot of people are bothered by, or at least I know our friend Brian's bothered by it. And it's in a just accessible enough, right, where it's medium light, where there is some strategy, or there's a lot of strategy to it, and there is a lot going on, but mechanically there is not a lot going on. Like, agreed. You can teach what you're doing in the game very simply. It's coming up with these advanced strategies that brings it up to the medium level. So you're just drafting birds from this deck of cards and then playing them to the wetlands, the grasslands, or the forest.
Yep.
And then each different bird has some combo. So you're building some sort of combo engine. And I just love that feeling of getting the engine rolling and finding new birds. And I really like this one. And the reason I put it as medium light is I taught it and played it with my parents. So there's no way it can't be more than medium, at least.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's fantastic. This was a game, just talking about complexity-wise, I wasn't afraid to teach Veronica the game. And that was early in our relationship, because she's predominantly my go-to playing partner when I'm not solo. So this wasn't one I was holding off to say, like, I don't know if you're ready to delve into, like, you can't sink your teeth into this game just yet.
Yeah,
I taught it to her early enough, and she's quite good at this game.
Yeah, yeah, I think it might be the thematic integration with the mechanism that just makes it so simple to understand what's happening. Not so simple, but simple.
Yeah, it's a good pick, and one that we reviewed here on the channel.
Yep. All right.
Number five.
My number five is a staple to Andrew's top 10 list. And in the exact same position as last year, for anybody who's keeping track at home, which I doubt is anybody, that would be Grand Austria Hotel.
Yay!
Published by Virginio Gigli and Simone Luciani. Nope, designed by them. Published by Lookout Games. I need to get my act together.
Oh, that's why I just haven't been saying designing and publishing, because we've mentioned all of these games.
That is fair. That's a good point. I don't know. I just put the commas after, so I feel like it's necessary. Dice drafting game, except unlike the Pulsar, where we talked about earlier, you draft them, and then in Pulsar, what you choose kind of determines how powerful it is. In Grand Austria, the die number that you choose determines what you're doing, and it's the number of dice that have rolled that number that determines how powerful it is. And I really like that mechanism. In addition to, I like that Clemens Franz art style. I know it's, I don't know if polarizing is the right word. I don't think anybody particularly hates it vehemently, but I think you just like it or you don't. And so I like the art in it. I like the idea of running a business and just kind of typical Euro-y goodness. So, yeah. We played it with the new expansion this year, the Let's Waltz expansion. I liked that a lot. We're going to try and play it again, hopefully, before we leave. with James and Brian.
Nice.
But, and I know the theme is one that you're not interested in, but someday maybe you'll play it. Maybe.
Someday my prince will come. Didn't we have that podcast that we just did a bunch of Disney references?
Someday.
Yeah, there's plenty of other Euro, yeah. dry Euro games I'd rather play over this. Sorry, man.
No, that's fine. Your loss. That's more Grand Austria goodness for me.
Enjoy it. Well, my number five is a fantastic game set in the West Kingdom. Mm. And of course, that's going to be Paladins.
Yep.
I've said it so many times now. Eureka moments. I love them. And this game in particular is one that you'll have a chance that you could get another meeple or a coin or a provision you weren't expecting to get, which then allows you to build a new building, which, surprise, shows a new white-colored meeple that you can then place on another space. Again, yada, yada, yada. You see a common theme with my top 10 here.
Yeah.
Now, what I will say is that even though you feel like your turn is coming to an end, these types of moments, it's the analogy I use, it's like toothpaste that you can squeeze a little more out of that turn. Yes.
I like that.
So Lost Ruins of Arnak and Hadrian's Wall also had that feature, but yeah. this one just does it better. And it's mostly because of the art. Because this one is designed or is
the Micho.
Yeah, exactly. Micho. So Paladins makes my number five.
Nice. Yeah, this is one that is great. I don't know. I like Paladins a lot. We discussed it in our West Kingdom overview, recap, if you will.
Yep.
I like that historical setting of it too. And I should have known that Hadrian's Wall was going to be a top 10, knowing how much you referenced that it's kind of the roll and write version of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just in my list from last May, this one dropped one spot because in my number four spot is now Dune Imperium. This was a total surprise for sure. So as I mentioned in the recent Best of 2021 games played, this game had a ton of buzz. Everybody was talking about this game, yet I remain skeptical. That's your method of doing things, it seemed. But then I played it again and again and again. And now I have that upgrade kit that I had mentioned previously. And I want to play it. There's just something about it. The game is now elevated to a new level. I'm mm-hmm. waiting for the expansion. That's the only reason this thing hasn't been tabled. Because that offers some new worker placement spots, more cards, and this dreadnought ship thing. One thing I really like about this game is that the solo is actually played against two super easy to run AI characters, and even the easy mode is challenging. Mm-hmm. And this is a fantastic game. I think it would have made my top 10 even without the intellectual property, but after seeing that movie, it bumps it way up here.
Yeah. That means I need to see the movie, I guess, too.
It's fantastic. Still, yeah. Gorgeous.
I was planning to read the book, but no, I've gotten more books and
just see the movie
in front of it. So I probably will just see the movie. Yeah, we have a HBO Max subscription somehow, so we should watch it.
Do it.
All righty, my number four is from my top 2021 list and one that I forgot to include, just like Wingspan. Because I forgot how good it was. That's One Night Ultimate series. Ted Alsbach, Akihisa Okui, published by Bezier Games. This is kind of the one of two, I guess, big social deduction games that gets people into the social deduction aspect of the hobby, at least. The other one being The Resistance. Not to say those are the only two that are the first ones played. They're just the two that are most common because mm-hmm. they're available very easily at Target, Walmart, etc. Yeah, one person's on a team of villagers. One person's on a team of werewolves / aliens / vampires / villains, whatever.
Slash.
Yeah. Continue. Zombies, mummies, I'm waiting slash. For you. Yeah. A lot of good memories from this one. Shouldn't be surprised. I like that deduction aspect, which can often be to my detriment in this game, where I'm more worried about trying to figure out who everybody was than figuring out who I was first to then play the role appropriately.
Who
so,
are you?
Yeah, you know, deduce what everyone is and then go, oh, crap, I'm a werewolf. It's too late. Can't fix that now. So, yeah. But, yep, this one, definitely the lightest one on my list. The lowest BGG ranked on my list at 487, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Bad taste.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it's not surprising. This isn't the kind of game that BGG users are going to rank highly, I think.
That's true. Yeah. You're not wrong.
You're not right, but you're not wrong.
I haven't played it. I can't judge you. I'm not going to criticize you.
This is not your type of game. I would not expect this. I, if you ever played it, which wouldn't be a huge, you know, it'd only be 7 to 10 minutes, so it wouldn't be a huge waste of your time, but I don't think you would enjoy it. So.
I mean, I'm just going to go ahead and pause our top 10 right now just to go ahead and say that you are more diverse of a player than I am.
Mm.
Because every single one of my games that I've mentioned thus far is resource management Euro game.
Mm.
I'm boring. I know what I like.
It won't be. You'll have a dungeon crawl.
One. Or two. Well, let's continue and see what we've got on our list.
Yeah.
Number three.
That continues with me. And for those that were listening last 2 weeks ago, would be Alchemist from Matush Kotri and Czech Games Edition. Yeah, spoiler alert, the only CGE game on my list. Sorry.
I actually find that shocking.
Yeah, I'll explain it at the end. This one also polarizing on the podcast. It's the deduction aspect. I mean, I like Euro games, which the Euro aspect of this game is not, I mean, it's not bad, but it's not standout.
True.
So if you're going in for a Euro game, you're not going to like it. But I like the mental gymnastics you have to do while you're waiting, basically. On your downtime is filled with, okay, well, if I have this and this, and trying puzzling together what to do with the deduction. So it gives me something to do while I'm sitting there waiting, and it's something that I like. So, yeah, that's why Alchemist is so high for me. If you don't like deduction, you're not going to like it. I'm not saying if you like deduction, you are going to like it, but that's what makes it so high for me.
See, I would disagree with you. I would enjoy this game if it was a little more forgiving, just slightly more forgiving, and I'd be okay with it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed our plays of it. It's just one mistake and you're derailed. That's it. You lost.
But I think that's because that's what we talked about a couple weeks ago. I don't remember if it was on the podcast or not, but like, I think it's because Brian and I really, really like sitting there and thinking and crunching through all of it. And so I think that made it that way.
True.
And if we were playing it quicker or more risky, like I think you and James just played it differently than we did. You guys played more risky.
Yep.
And we played sure bets only. And that ended up screwing you.
Yeah, that's true. So. Well, speaking of a sure bet, you knew this next game was going to be on the list, and it was probably going to be in this position too, and that being Dwellings of Eldervale. So this one, there was a ton of hype around this game, just like Dune Imperium. So when this Kickstarter game was being fulfilled, everybody was talking about it, and mostly because of the lavish production with screen-printed meeples, the monster miniatures with sound bases, and game trays for easy setup. But I believe it's the gameplay that actually makes this game so much fun. If you cut all of that frills out of this, it's still a fantastic, gorgeous game. Because the game mechanisms include area control, worker placement, and tableau building. There's also a combat kind of built into it, where you actually roll a certain number of dice depending on which of your meeples are involved in combat. Whoever rolls the higher number wins. So a single worker can actually beat a large force. Sort of a David versus Goliath scenario. Mm-hmm. Also, each faction has different abilities, and there's 16 total factions to choose from. I've only played it solo, which was also a common trend during my last top 10 in May. I've played it a lot, though. This is one that you and I 100% will play before we leave, because I absolutely love this game.
Yeah, yeah, I do want to play this game because you've given it such high praise, and everybody was giving it high praise back in May, especially.
Yeah.
You haven't played all the factions yet, have you?
No, I've probably played 8 of them.
Yeah, I'm still quite a few.
Yeah, for a game, because this is one I'd usually, when I bring it down, I'll play like 3 or 4 times in a row, and I'll just kind of keep flipping through some factions. So maybe I've actually played 12 of them. I've played a lot.
Yeah.
But I might have also repeated some of them. Some of them are a little more fun than others.
Oh, gotcha.
For me. Just for, like.
Right, yeah. Play style. Right.
Exactly. Well, let's go ahead and move into number 2. Now, last May, I asked, what do you think my last 2? You already know the 2 games, but what do you think the order is?
I think it's Gloomhaven at 2 and Too Many Bones at 1.
And you're absolutely right. And, like you said, Gloomhaven, this includes all Gloomhaven-related things. Yeah. This has had 0 plays in 2021. But I've thoroughly enjoyed my 2 full run-throughs of this game. And playing this game twice through probably makes me one of the few gamers in this entire hobby who has completed the storyline twice. But sadly, it's fading in my book.
Yeah.
With the new Frosthaven taking 10 years, it seems, to arrive, it's hurting my love affair for this universe. I could argue that more plays of Dwellings of Eldervale could very well overtake Gloomhaven on the list. But, and it's a huge but, I still love the cooperative nature of this game, even though I'm not a big cooperative guy, or maybe I am based on my number 1. Yeah. But there is also a potential for a semi-cooperative part, as some characters controlled by some of my best friend named Jeff will take a Leroy Jenkins approach to get gold for themselves or a treasure chest. Or just watch the world burn, because that's what Jeff does in this game. I think another thing that hurts this ranking is the expansion Forgotten Circles, because this is my take. I'll see what you think. I think it's just too cumbersome to play. I think Isaac Childress took everything that he wanted to ever design for Gloomhaven and threw those mechanisms, threw that game style into those scenarios within that expansion. And he was trying to see what stuck to the wall.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff that did stick moved into Jaws of the Lion, which I also think is a mistake.
I think he also said that the Diviner was the character that he most wanted to play out of any of them that he designed. And I think that, I don't remember if I'm making that up or not. I thought I heard that somewhere. And so that comes through in, like, you have to play that character in every one of those scenarios, or you cannot. I think it's a requirement in
it is
in them. Yeah.
And I could see that, because that character is a coward.
Yeah.
Now, you can build it a certain way to make it super powerful, but it's only powerful if you can cooperate with others, just like the Tinkerer, which is his actual favorite character in the base box of Gloomhaven. All right. Regardless, I will always love the game for the time I spent with Jeff during a rough time for me personally, and for playing together with Rob at a conference up in Washington, D.C. The memories, and the memories alone at this point, is what sustains this position, despite some more recent shortcomings of this game system.
Yeah. Yeah. And as we said when I had it on my list, I am excited to see where he takes Frosthaven. It might not be in a direction any of us like, but I'm excited to see what happens now that there's expectations.
10 years from now.
All right, mine. Well, how about you guess? You can guess what my 2 are and what order they're in.
Spirit Island is 2, Bruges is 1.
You do have the games correct, but in an upset. In an upset, Bruges is at number 2. From Herfeld, published by Z-Man Games, it is down 1. I've finally come to terms that I don't play Bruges enough for it to be number 1. It holds it's another kind of similar to Castles of Burgundy special place for me getting into the hobby. And they did a reprint, and when they reprinted it, they called it, I think it's Hamburg now.
Yeah.
And they being Queen Games. And I was not happy with that production at all. I was waiting for that in order before I purchased it. I was completely unhappy with how the Kickstarter was run and what they were doing to change the game. So I just went and bought Bruges. And we've had it for probably 9 months and still yet to play it. So I realized it can't be number one if it's been sitting that long. I do still love it and I will still happily play it with anybody, but it's that constant trying to figure out playing my old favorites and trying to keep up with the new games, especially with the podcast.
Yep.
That just keeps it on the shelf. And yeah. And then rolling into my number one, which is Spirit Island, designed by Eric Royce and published by Greater Than Games, up two spots from number three. We discussed this a lot last night, actually. This is one that is very easy to get to the table for me, because if Brian ever comes over to play games and Nicole's not feeling it that night, Spirit Island's our go-to. Because we both know it well enough that, you know, we can set it up with ease. I mean, ease being for that game. It still is 20 or so minutes, even with the insert.
Really?
Yeah, I mean,
you must
just
not know
like,
how to use inserts.
Well, I mean, you got to pick out. So once you add in Branch and Claw, you also have to start picking out the adversaries, and then they have special rules for setup.
Yeah,
and
you're
so it's not identical setup every time, and that's
fine.
Fine. I'm not dumb, okay? A little bit. Just because I'm not a doctor.
No, it's not that. It's just you can't see colors, which is why two Stefan Feld games
I
made
can
your top
see
10.
Colors. You can't see colors. And then that's a fact.
That's a fact. No, so for the listener base out there, like I said, I got Spirit Island to the table this week, and it's one of those that it's always painful to admit Andrew was right, but Andrew was right. I made this top 10 list before I played that game, so I could easily see it being in this top 10. I think Hadrian's Wall gets bumped out, and I think Spirit Island goes into that place. But I wanted to at least maintain the list as it was to keep the integrity of my list. But you're right. Spirit Island for solo, very quick. I think I can get a game in about 45 minutes or so. Yeah. I've already played it 6 times, and I learned it 3 days ago.
And I think I forgot to explain Spirit Island because I was so ready to talk
You're
about
so excited.
How easy it is. Yeah.
How do you play Spirit Island?
Yeah, so Spirit Island is kind of like a reverse colonization game where you are the spirits or the land protecting the island that is being invaded by colonists. And so you all are different spirits who have different special powers. So you might be the Ocean's Hungry Grasp, which is, as Josh knows, my favorite. You might be the sleeping or slumbering serpent, which is, it's a promo one, but that's like one of the harder ones to play, actually. Mm-hmm. So it's a terrible example.
I think there's 20 of them. There's
yeah,
20 spirits.
There's a lot. And I don't know that all of their actual names, but
yeah, I would be
Stone Giant, River, Dementors. I don't know. There's a lot of different
Dementors.
Things.
That
one's in Jagged Earth. That one is a contender for my second favorite,
because that's the one that just generates a lot of fear,
lots of fear, which is fun because that adds, you know, some more random aspect, which I like.
Yeah, well,
yeah, that's Spirit Island in a nutshell.
Yeah, fantastic choice for your surprising number one. So we've got an upset, and on my list I would say this is an upset. Too Many Bones has now displaced Gloomhaven.
Mm-hmm.
And this includes all Too Many Bones content, including the Gearlock Child, which is essentially Baby Yoda. But I've played this game multiple one-off games. I started a campaign with Andrew, which collapsed after one night. I've also completed my own solo campaign. But this is the phrase. I hope I'm saying it right. This game scratches me right where I itch.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are you going to try to replace the Fills All Holes?
Yeah, I am, because that one might be a little much. Slurp, slurp. But the component quality is through the roof. The writing is witty and enjoyable. The difficulty is extremely hard, as Andrew can attest when we played it together. Mm-hmm. But there's ways of mitigating that difficulty. And as an example, like if you could have a single point baddie you might think is hard, but it's not going to be as hard as 4 1-point baddies that you faced the day before. There seems like a really steep learning curve to learn the game, and the price tag may scare a lot of people off, but I say give this a try if you have the means, or if you're Andrew and have a friend with a copy of this game, because it truly is amazing. And I think its only negative is remembering some of the little rules if it's been a while between plays, as each character has its own unique dice slash rules, which can also be hard to learn. But, you know, I've played it solo one character, I played it solo two characters, and I usually don't seem to forget the rules or some of the things that are a little more involved when I play solo. I can't recommend this game enough. I actually recommended it to my attending today. I'm not telling her to go buy it, but give it a try. Yeah. This is, there's just something about this. It's not just rolling two die. You're rolling like 7 die sometimes, right. 10
too
dice.
Too many bones, but not really too many.
It
the
is.
The right amount.
It's, this game is just fantastic. And it's done by a company that really puts the emphasis on the customer and puts customer first. So that was the other reason I wanted to supplant this, because there's just something engaging with that community. Isaac does it too with Gloomhaven and his company, but Chip Theory Games, it's just, I feel like I'm part of their family, and I am a top fan on Facebook, so I have to maybe give that caveat. I love this system. I love this game.
Yeah, no, this one is fun, and I didn't stop playing it for lack of having fun. It was just kind of the same thing. I wasn't coming over your house enough is basically what was happening.
Yeah.
And then I was forgetting the rules and feeling like a burden. And,
and anytime you have a game group, it's always hard to play campaign style games.
Right. Right. Because you always, you know, like you, that's what we'll get in the habit of, like, I think last year we tried it for a little bit where it's like, okay, everybody gets to pick their game of the month and we'll play that game 4 times. And we do it like, 2, maybe 3 months, and then we're like, yeah, no, we're just doing one game a week. And yeah, because I mean, so much comes out and you want to play all the new hotness, but then you want to play some of your old favorites, and it's like, you can't settle on one for a long time.
You're right. And I think that's a good way of wrapping up this conversation. If you look at our top 10s, we've got some new ones that weren't there back in May. We've got some new games that are new to us for 2021 that are rightfully in our top 10. But it'll be interesting to see how, as especially for me, I'm still relatively new to this hobby. I'm not as old as you, old man, but I feel
only
like my list,
like 2 or 3 more years, but yeah. I'll take credit.
You've played more games than me, but I think
not be the case anymore.
Yeah, because I played 600
more
games.
I've played more old games than you have.
I ended up playing with New Year's Eve. I played 600 games, wow. Like 605.
You have played 605 unique games.
605 total plays of games last year.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Nice. So it's like, that's quite a few games.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we don't play that often, for sure. And I don't know. We've gotten into reading a lot lately, and we kind of waffle between reading and working out and playing games. And
yeah, I mean, somebody didn't play Pulsar with us last night because she was reading.
Yeah, she did finish. She got the new, it's not new, but Brandon Sanderson's Elantris, and that's the last one she has left in his Cosmere series. So I'm almost there. I'm 2 behind her in the Cosmere. 3, I got 2 in a novella, 2.5.
Wow. Just anyway, make sure. Yeah. She knows that she would have lost last night.
She would have lost. So I was going to talk about some of the ones that dropped off for me. The Arnak gate, I guess. So basically I had a really hard time between the following 5. Aeon's End, Fresco, Dungeon Pets, Arnak, Paladins of the West Kingdom, and so 6, and Castles of Burgundy. We're all vying kind of for that number 10 spot. All the rest of it was pretty solid, going to be in the top 10 for me. Gloomhaven actually wasn't for a while. And then Nicole's like, that makes no sense. How could Gloomhaven not be in your top 10? Like, we've played it so much and all the memories. Like, yeah, that is a good point. So I had to
stupid book reader.
Yeah, I had to put add some Gloomhaven in. That bumped Aeon's End out, and then I couldn't let Castle of Burgundy fall out, so that bumped Arnak out. So yeah, and Paladins probably should be up there too, but is kind of recency bias. Put Teo back in too.
It's true.
So
well, I think once you play this expansion, based on everything I've heard for Lost Ruins, I think that's gonna bump that in next year.
Yeah, and probably Paladins will get bumped into when I get when we get City of Crowns. You have it.
I do.
I do not.
I haven't played it yet.
Yeah, I got
story of my life.
Yeah. You take her home, drive all night until she's frozen in time.
Oh God, Bozo.
One Direction, greatest band of all time.
Nope. Yeah, I look back at my previous top 10 and I just because I had played so many last year, I had bumped out quite a few games that wouldn't be in most people's top 10. Like I enjoyed Dice Throne Adventure and it didn't need to be in a top 10. That's pretty clever. Fantastic game. But like I said, I'd rather have a little bit heavier experiences in this list. So that got bumped. And Underwater Cities was close, but that's something like you and I talked last night when we were playing Pulsar. Haven't played it. Vladimir Sushi is great. I really enjoyed. I actually liked Underwater Cities better than Pulsar, and I'm excited to see what his Messina, whatever year it is,
1347, I think.
Yeah, sure. I hate years in games.
Might be 1349.
But. I think he does a good job.
Pulsar 2849, that's easy to remember. That's obviously when we're going to discover how to put pulsars into energy. Duh.
Of course. 2849. Of course.
I can predict 847 years into the future. 827. Just can't do math. I think I agree too. I would put Underwater Cities above Pulsar for sure. That's my favorite from him so far.
And solo mode. I always have to factor that into my decisions.
Yeah. I need to play some more Underwater Cities to determine. I've only played it the one time. I think we played it twice back to back. But I was going to play it solo one time and took it all out. And then I was like, meh. I'll just play in a Steam game. So I played some. I don't remember what game I played. Probably Small World or Lorenzo or something. On Steam. But yeah.
Well, I hope our listeners appreciated this discussion, and it's nice to take a step back. But we'll be back at reviewing games on our next episode, which we've already mentioned it. We're going to be covering John DeClair's signature game.
Yeah.
But we're going to be covering John DeClair in an AEG's game of Mystic Veil. And peppering in some of the expansions in that discussion, but it's predominantly going to be the base game, Mystic Veil. So make sure you tune in to our next episode. Follow us on Instagram, as it's going to be more active here lately. And send us an email at
meeplemightpodcast@gmail.com, which is checked on my iPhone daily.
He's handling that, and I'm handling the Instagram. So feel free to reach out. If you think we're wrong with our top 10, if you think Castles of Burgundy should definitely not be on here because it's a lack of color or a dearth of color, let us know. Maybe Gloomhaven is number one on your list, Jeff Miller. Give us a reach out. But anyways, we really appreciate everyone tuning in to this episode, and we'll see everybody in a fortnight.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Good night.
And good luck.
Thanks for listening to Meeple Night. Today's episode was recorded in Charlottesville, Virginia on January 7th, 2022 and uploaded using Anchor. Our theme music is All Night by Declan DP, provided by Audio Library Plus, which provides free and safe music for content creators. For all the latest from Meeple Night, follow us on Instagram, join our Facebook group, or email us at meeplenightpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks, so until then, dream a little dream of games.